I am John Perkins, and we're here to talk about getting started in photography. I'm guessing most of you have already done that to some extent. I don't think there's anybody here that hasn't taken at least a picture. So I'm going to start with a question for everyone here, which is, okay, you're here in a photography workshop, which means you have some interest in the hobby, the field, the whatever you want to call it. So my question for you is, this remote is backwards. Yes. Why? Why are you taking pictures? Why do you want to take pictures? Why are you interested in photography? So the reason you take pictures matters for, well, it matters for a couple reasons. One reason it matters is kind of the more practical. If you're taking pictures of product for selling things, you're gonna have a different set of goals than and needs in your photography than if you're taking pictures for portraits, landscapes, that sort of thing. So if you're taking pictures of product to put up on your website or in a catalog, that sort of thing, you need pictures that look good, but more than that, they have to be informative. So that's going to change how you approach photography. If you're wanting to take portraits, formal pictures of families, people, for keepsakes, you're going to just have a whole different perspective, no pun intended, on how you approach the activity of photography. If you want to make money as a photographer, shooting weddings would be one of your options. I'm not generally a fan, personally, of shooting portraits. I think I can enjoy being the number two shooter at a wedding sometime just for the fun of it, but I don't think it's a good idea to get between the bride and anything on wedding day. She's got enough on her mind, and so I don't know, I think wedding photography would just be more stress than fun for me. And generally, I just am not I don't like taking pictures of people, sorry. I prefer architecture or landscapes, generally. I think what we can boil it down to is, well, first, if you're into photography for making money, you're in the wrong workshop, and probably in the wrong field. There are not but so many people making a living at photography. So, sorry to dash your hopes, but the odds aren't good for you. And in this workshop, we're not going to talk about how to make money. I think we're all here for the same reason, generally, in that we enjoy photography. I'm guessing that's why most of you, some of those people back there, are just here to see what I say because they're friends and want to see me embarrass myself. But those of you who are here for the photography reasons, you just enjoy photography for one reason or another. But we aren't all interested in shooting the same things. And so I'm going to have to be pretty wide in what I talk about, not super deep because of that. Another key point to take with you from here at the start, okay, if you're taking pictures because you enjoy it, you're taking these photos out of that joy, this gives you your first building block in how and what you shoot. You shoot the things you enjoy looking at. Maybe that says something about me when I say I don't like taking pictures of people. Don't shoot something because it's what photographers point their camera at. Point your camera where you enjoy pointing it. Can I get someone to kill these front row of lights, please? I think it's the one with the white tape. Sometimes we just snap pictures. This one I took yesterday. I was putting my camera in my bag, and my son was at work, and I was gathering my stuff together, and I just saw him there, and hey, I had a camera with a lens that framed him nicely, and so I just snapped the shot. I don't know that he was super thrilled about it, once he realized what I was doing. We don't know what our pictures will become. This photographer, I love this picture, this photographer likely thought, and I don't have a credit for it, I'm sorry, this photographer likely thought that he was capturing a glimpse of the future as these fellows, they experienced this newfangled futuristic transportation method, bombing through the roads of Ohio. Looks like you have joy, concern, and confusion, maybe. let's see, it's sort of off here. Sounds like Ohio, maybe. Anyway, this person took this picture, and he was probably thinking, I'm photographing the future right now. But I look at it and say, this is a snapshot of the past. So you don't really know what some of your shots are going to be. This picture, it's World War I soldiers peeling onions, wearing gas masks. I have a feeling the photographer was thinking that it was funny, and that stands from then till now. I think it's pretty funny. But I also see it and think of those men who were behind the scenes. They were laboring away. There were no medals for kitchen patrol, but they were serving in a real way. And so I don't know that he really thought about that. I don't know what he thought. But this picture speaks to me. Deeper things than just, haha, that's funny. And probably to some of you, it speaks different things than it does to me. And this one. I don't know what was going through the mind of this photographer in war-torn Europe in the 1940s. But I know that this photo rips at my heart every time I see that little girl sitting in the rubble and clutching her little baby doll to her chest. He may have just been documenting what his hometown was like. But it speaks pretty loudly to me. Getting Started in Photography is the name of the workshop. I'm probably going to have to go faster per slide to make this work. The purpose of this workshop is to help some of you move from 0 to 1, some of you move from 1 to 2, and maybe a couple of you from 2 to 3. It's going to be a pretty basic look at some things. What does it take to get started or to move forward in your photography? This is one of my favorite pictures that I've ever taken. I'll touch on the composition and circumstances in a bit, but I want to start with the gear I was using. You get with a certain class of photographer, and all they want to talk about is the gear. Hi, Dan. And so some people, you know, that's really where they want to start. So I'm going to start with this, the favorite of my pictures that I've ever taken. I took it with this Samsung Galaxy S5, and mine was even that ugly blue shiny cover. So no, I was not out there with the newest Canon or Sony, with my light meter. I was standing in someone else's field, trying to do this quickly so I could get out of there before anybody wondered why I was out there. So. You don't need this. A lot of people come to photography and think the only thing standing between me and getting progress in my photography is a kit like this. A few nice lenses, some nice filters, get a flash to throw up on top, tripod. I'd say the only thing in there that I really want you to go get if you don't have it is a tripod. Other than that, you don't need any of this. Might be handy, but you don't need it. We're going to take this approach moving through the rest of this workshop. Technical, we're going to look at technical in terms. I'll try not to bore you too much. Talk about composition. Composition is how you're putting pictures and scenes together, how you're approaching photos. And then tools you can use and tools you should use. Also, I have a handout I want to hand out before you leave. I don't want you reading it right now, but it has some notes that I want you to take with you and some resources you can refer to. For you to progress you will quickly reach the point where you want to control some of your own settings. So if you buy a camera, make sure you have some manual controls. I'm not really going to be getting into cameras a lot and some of the details between DSLR, mirrorless, point and shoot, all that. Not what this workshop is going to get into. Just make sure, whatever stage you're at, that as you move forward, you can take more manual control over different settings as you shoot, because that's how you're going to grow in being able to change what you're doing and understanding how it works. If you're shooting primarily with a phone, which at this point, the last statistics I saw, I think it was saying that estimates were 90% of pictures taken are taken on the phone these days, and then I forget how many on tablets, which is just crazy, don't do that. That's an easy way to break a tablet, holding this thing up. And then a tiny little fraction on purpose-built cameras. If you are primarily shooting from a phone, don't feel bad. There are a lot of people doing that, and you can make some really nice end results out of it. But get an app that lets you control manual functions of your camera. On Apple, on iOS, Halide is a great app. It's about $6. And on Android, a paid app that works very nicely is Camera FV5, named very smoothly and easy to remember. Also, a lot of Android phones these days, if you go into your camera, there is a manual mode. So if you've got a modern Samsung or a Motorola, something like that, there's a pretty good chance you have a lot of control over your settings without having to get a second app. I will touch on this very quickly. I'm saying don't be ashamed if you're shooting with a camera primarily at this point. One difference to keep in mind is sensor size. So the sensor is the actual sensitive part inside your camera that processes what comes in through the lens. Full frame is the big square up here, rectangle, sorry. And your smartphone cameras are down here in the smallest square generally. So you may have an older APS-C camera that is a 16 megapixel, and you might go pick up a new smartphone that's a 16 megapixel. Those megapixels are not created equally based on the size of the sensor and just the physics of how you're capturing light. So don't be ashamed of shooting with a camera, but don't think that just because your iPhone takes great pictures and they have great specs that it is equivalent to another camera if you need to find yourself needing to progress. There's a quote I've heard quite a bit, which is the best camera is the one you have with you. And so that tractor in the field, I had two phones in my car. And so I got shot with phones, not with a camera. Okay, not with a purpose-built camera. In many cameras, you'll see symbols similar to this. They are shooting modes. Up close or macro, landscape, night, portrait, action, and there will be some variation of these you'll see in almost any camera you look at, or a lot of camera apps will have them also. All these icons do when you click them is manually adjust a bunch of those settings that I'm telling you you want to be able to learn to tweak yourself. It's not that you never use any of these, but use those as a starting point to help you understand what's going on. What those modes are going to do is adjust shutter, aperture, and ISO in general. And I'm going to run through these here for a few minutes, some foundational technical ideas, and hope I don't bore you. Shutter, aperture, and ISO. We'll look at shutter first. So shutter is the curtain that opens to reveal the scene to the sensor. The longer it's open, the more light you get. The longer it's open, the more things can move. And that's going to be a term called motion blur that we'll talk about in a minute. You can also think of the shutter as your eyelids rather than a curtain. If your eyes are closed, you open them, take the picture, close them. The longer it's open, the more light you get, the more detail you get, etc. The longer they're open, the more you can see something moving past you. We'll get into details in a moment. Aperture is the pupil of the camera. You shine a light in someone's eye, and you see the pupil get small. You look at somebody in a dark room, their pupil gets big. It's the opening. It's the hole between the front of your lens and the sensor. The wider it's open, the more light you get. But the wider it's open, the shallower your depth of field. That's another thing we're going to touch on in a minute. You want enough light, but not too much. And you can see how changing the shutter and the aperture would work together. If you have that aperture wide open, as big of a hole as you can get, as much light coming through, you're not going to want to leave that shutter open for a long time because you're just going to have light pouring into that sensor and just washing out everything. Whereas if you have a quick shutter, you might need that aperture to be open. And we'll get into a little bit why you would adjust one versus the other. ISO, this is the sensitivity to light. If you think back to the film days, you could buy film rolls that they were rated, different ISO ratings, for how quickly the film responded to light. The higher the ISO number, the more brightness you get, the more sensitive your sensor is to the light that's coming in. You can think of ISO as fake light, in a way. You can be in a dim room, I could be up here with my camera, and so these people up front are fairly dark. I could crank that ISO up and get fake light kind of poured in there to see them a little better. But it's not natural real light, and so you lose some things generally. The more fake light you're pouring in, the higher you're shooting that ISO, you'll get grainy and splotchiness in your photos. There are pros and cons to it. A really low ISO, you can have your darks stay dark, but then a high ISO allows for dim areas to be brighter, and we'll touch into some practical event and some of the examples. So we have mainly these three I want to focus on here. There are other settings, but these three are the ones we're mostly going to look at. Shutter, aperture, and ISO. You want to have a foundational understanding of what they're doing so that you can start experimenting with them and seeing how to get the effect you want in the scenes you shoot. And so shutter affects light and motion, aperture affects light and focus, and ISO affects light and quality. And they all kind of have to balance with each other. So these are a couple pictures of a little creek up in Pennsylvania, and the tripod was sitting in the creek and smelled a little funny ever after that because it got put away wet. But you'll notice, it might be hard to see in this room, but you'll notice the water looks kind of soft, maybe almost a little jello-like, instead of crisp and clear and reflective, like you think of water. That's because it was kind of dim in the shade, and so the shutter had to be open longer. And so that shutter was open longer, and the water was moving. And so that's what gets that soft effect. The longer you leave your shutter open, you're going to get anything that's moving is going to get softer. In our last family portrait, mostly the children were doing well about sitting still, but my daughter moved her leg right as the shutter was taken. It was getting too late in the evening. It was kind of dim. We had a fairly long exposure. The shutter was open pretty long. And her dress was had little flowers on it. And then down near the one leg, it was just kind of a smear of different shades of purple. It was because the shutter had to be open, she moved. Now, a lot of people like this soft water look. It's grown on me, I didn't used to like it. I liked water to be frozen in time when you took the picture. In some ways, I kind of like it. You'll see it a lot. If you start looking for this in calendars, that sort of thing, you'll see a lot of people go for the soft water. They're doing that by leaving the shutter open. We'll talk a little bit later about some of the challenges in doing that on purpose. That camera wanted to do it. I had to do it to get the light I wanted, so that's what we settled with. You can also do light painting. This is an interchange on the National Mall in DC at night, and you can see the headlights going through. That was done with, I forgot to look it up, I think that was a 30-second exposure with a really small aperture. Very late at night. That was with me. And here's an example someone else took. Dave Worley, the photographer of Soft Water. To me, that is very pretty. Now, part of me says, oh, I love a picture where that waterfall is just like captured still. But it's a very pleasing look. He did that on purpose. You're going to have to leave your shutter open to do that. But remember, you're probably then going to have to tighten down your aperture because you don't want all the light to come flooding into your sensor while it's happening. Now, talking about aperture, I said depth of field earlier. I want to explain simply what that is. In this diagram, this comes from photographylife.com. Once you start shooting more and more pictures, you're a lot more conscious about making sure people get credit for who did the work. The photographer is the same distance from, I think this is a bear, same distance in both of these. And so he's focusing on that bear's head. But here he has a smaller hole, a large number aperture. It's stopped down, is one term that's used. And so he is able to focus. See, all of this is nice and crispy. It's not at all fuzzy and blurry. He has a large depth of field. The field in which he's focusing is large. Up here, he has a narrow depth of field. So he has the aperture as big as he can get it. But you let in more light when you open that aperture, but you narrow down that depth of field. So if you started with a small hole, your aperture is tight, you have this, and as you adjust your aperture, the amount of the seam, I need two lasers, the amount of the seam that is moving in keeps getting smaller. The tighter and tighter you make that aperture, you're letting in less light, and you're also expanding the amount of area that is in focus. I will throw a caveat out here. I'm giving some generalizations and trying to make technical things less nerdy. And so there are probably some real photographers here, they're like, and wincing a little bit when I say some of these things. Principles, I think, are sound. They can argue with me later. So here's an example. In the handout, there's detail about what the F numbers mean in aperture. I'm not going to take the time right now. Smaller number, bigger hole. That's how aperture works. Smaller number is a bigger hole. So here we have an F1.4. Great big hole in that lens, letting the light through. That purple car is in focus. This guy is slightly starting to get in focus. Can't see much here or back there. F3, 3.2. You can focus on kind of the three middle cars. These guys are still pretty fuzzy. F5, they're all fairly crisp. That's just an example of how that aperture depth of field works. Now, you notice these are all about the same brightness. So think about that. All those things are affecting each other. Every time he changed his aperture to change this scene to make this example, he would have had to tweak probably shutter right now, he was doing ISO, so that it didn't get brighter and brighter as he took those pictures. Does that make sense? I don't know why I asked that, nobody's gonna like respond yes or no. Here's another example, shallow depth of field, which is something you'll see a lot that can be really nice. You take a picture, it highlights the thing you wanna focus on, everything else kind of just gets less noticeable. So this cat's face and eyes and whiskers and ear, you know, it's right there, it pops out at you. But everything else is fading away, more and more blurry, less and less detail, and you can't even tell what is behind the cat. Is there a shelf back there? Is there a lamp back there? We don't know. It's all just faded out because it's a very narrow depth of field. Big hole, narrow depth of field, lots of detail here, nothing behind. Now, ISO, I want to touch on this a little bit. This was that same night in DC. I wanted it to look like pictures at night. So you could crank your ISO up and allow more fake light, make more sensitivity to the light that's there. But then your sky is going to start to be a little more light. So my ISO was as low as my camera would go. I was at 100 ISO. ISO, low number is dark. High number is bright. Opposite of aperture. Aperture, low number is bright. High number is dark. So I had a very low ISO. And actually, an example of how that would be used, I didn't put my picture in, and I don't have Doug's picture. We both took pictures of a blossoming tree that night. And Duff was playing with trying to make it look like where you couldn't tell whether the picture was taken at night or in the day. You had these blossoms there, and you could not tell. He had balanced his ISO, his shutter, his aperture. That light in there, it was just these beautiful blossoms, and it would be a coin flip to say, was that taken at night or during the day? The picture I took of that same tree, I wanted it to look like night and have the street light shining on the blossoms. And so he would have had to use a higher ISO, whereas I had my ISO very low so that the sky and everything around was very dark and only the light that was shining right on the tree would be captured. Here I had, I wanted to enhance the fact that this was at night and these columns were lit up. This is a World War II memorial in the National Mall. This shot, I thought I had my notes in here of what the actual specs were that I shot. I think that was a 6-second exposure. So my camera was on a tripod, the shutter opened for 6 seconds, and then closed. And my aperture, I think, was up around 9 or 10, so I had a fairly small hole. And this shot, this one was shot 100 ISO, f/13 aperture, so a pretty small hole, and 15 seconds of exposure. So my camera shutter went click and stayed open for 15 seconds, which is a really long time when you have a camera sitting there, and then it closed. You have to have a tripod, and you either want a remote to fire it or you want to turn on the self-timer, the 2-second delay, because even just you focusing, clicking that button and letting go could introduce vibration in. And 15 seconds, it might not make that much of a difference. But, yeah. So, shutter, aperture, and ISO. I can't dwell here. Photography is either a battle or a dance, I'm not sure which, with you and life. And so these are your tools to make that work. I want to touch on white balance for just a moment, then we'll get into composition. How do you set up photos to, we'll get into composition after white balance. White isn't white. Sorry if that burst your bubble, but white isn't white. Brains correct for this, but cameras don't, even though they try. So white balance is for tweaking what white looks like. There are settings for trying to autocorrect, so you can tell your camera I'm shooting under fluorescent lights, and it will try to automatically balance for that because it knows fluorescent lights have this sort of tinge to them. Incandescent lights, you can say, I'm shooting in incandescent lights, like your old-fashioned light bulbs. Wow, that makes me feel old to call those old-fashioned. But the camera will go, okay, so I know that white in this situation looks a little different because of how the light is in this room. And an example of that would be if we took that banner that says Christian Light on the wall, if we took that outside, that white would look different. If we just set our white balance at one thing, took a picture of it in here under the fluorescent light, and then took a picture of it outside, it would look different because of the lighting. So white balance is how you can try to correct that. You can also use it just to have fun. You can play around with white balance and just manually adjust it, cooler, warmer, kind of blue to red. And you can do things like with flowers or sunset. It's fun to play around with the white balance a little bit and see what you can make pop and just look different and strange. Play with this to see how changing your white balance can affect colors and scenery. You can do that on most phones too. I think even just the default iPhone app lets you change the white balance. If you are shooting with multiple cameras, I don't know how many of you carry multiple cameras, but if you're shooting with multiple cameras, you can set your white balance the same on both of them. So you don't have, when you get back and look at your pictures, these ones look way more blue than these ones or that sort of thing. Because you can kind of auto-correct white balance later if you need to. That's another thing, like wedding photographers, if they're shooting multiple cameras, they would usually lock their white balance on the two cameras. So the pictures are either both wrong or right the same direction because they're shooting in the same environment. Okay, composition. This is more text than I like to have on the slide, but I'll go ahead and read it. In the visual arts, composition is the placement or arrangement of visual elements or ingredients in a work of art, as distinct from the subject. The term composition means putting together and can apply to any work of art from music to writing to photography that is arranged using conscious thought. So you walk out the door and take a picture of Myrna's water garden out there, and you just step out there and take it, you've not composed anything. You have not put any conscious thought into it. Composition would come with how you approach it. What angle are you going to use? How are you going to frame it with the building or the trees, that sort of thing. Dan Pashman says, on matters of taste, there can be no dispute. I like that quote. I think it is technically right and practically wrong. I know a lot of people who spend plenty of time arguing things that are matters of taste. Canon versus Sony, let's go, Dan. What we want to cover this afternoon are some things that are either closer to standards or more common tastes. So when I say this is the better way to do it, that is somewhat my taste and somewhat what I found to be a prevalent taste. But if you like something different, go for it. We do have different tastes. My wife finds this picture underwhelming. I really like it. Now, some of you hearing me say that I really like this, due to our different tastes that I've just revealed, are more likely to dismiss things I say moving forward. Rule of thirds. Probably a lot of you thought this would come up here today. The rule of thirds is, I'm just going to touch on it here. I don't think I'll ask for a raise of hands if anyone thinks this picture would look better centered. But the rule of thirds kind of comes down to this. Stop centering everything in your pictures. Don't just plop everything in the middle. Say, I've got equal margin on both sides, I'm good. This picture, we have, I don't know how well you can see this grid from back there, you have grid lines dividing into thirds, both directions. And so you have sort of the horizon level back here, just above the third line, and you have the monument right here. The reason the rule of thirds is often used is it tends to feel balanced and just pleasing to have things where these corners intersect. Our eyes just like that. They're drawn to that. That works when you have a square image, when you have a 16 by 9 image like this. Cutting it into thirds, it's just those intersections are kind of hot spots for where your eyes look and what tends to kind of feel nice and balanced. This picture we looked at earlier. I did not walk into that field and put the grid up on the back of my camera. A lot of cameras will let you turn that on, including apps, where it's just an overlay so you can get a feel for where your things are. I do often now shoot with that grid turned on just to get a better feeling of positioning, but I try not to be married to putting everything on the third lines. That said, I went into the field and I wanted the sunlight coming from over here. I wanted that bleeding in and I wanted the tractor. And I'm sorry if I had just stepped out here a little farther and put the tractor smack in the middle, I don't think I'd have as nice as a picture. The balance would, it would look a little lazy. It would just feel kind of blocked. Whereas this, there's some flow to the picture. Feels nice. And I was amused when later, just cropping down a tiny little bit, that third line went, right smack in the middle of the tractor. That was not intentional. It was just what looked nice in the back of my phone when I got out there in the field. I want to digress really quickly. Two points I want to make while we're thinking about this picture. This light. Photography is about light. I saw this beautiful golden hour light just pouring in. I had just left work. It was when I was working here. I had just left work and was heading out around 11 to go home. And it was just this beautiful golden light. And I was thinking, somewhere there's a beautiful picture of that. Somewhere I could get a nice view of that peeking over a hill or something. So I was driving out 11 looking at both sides of the road all the time. Where can I pull over and find something that I can use this light? I was expecting to get it peeking over something. And I was driving along and I saw up on the hill, hey, there's a tractor up there in the field. And so I turned around at the next road and came back and went up there, and there were no trespassing signs and there were no fences. And so I said, hey, this is my time. And so I got out. I had two phones in the car, an iPhone and a Samsung, and went out there. And somewhere I have a picture. I took a picture of the backside of the tractor because I thought someday this will be a good example, and I couldn't find it for this workshop. I don't know if I'll ever need it again or not. But the backside of the tractor was ugly. It's just an old tractor. But coming around to this side, it was just beautiful golden light streaming in, but the sky was just beautiful, and it was just the perfect opportunity. Now, I was looking for that. I didn't know I was looking for a tractor on a hill, but I was looking around going, I know there's going to be something pretty here this evening. So go through life a little bit that way, if you're interested in photography. Think about, where am I going to find something pretty in here that I can capture? Second, I went to a stranger's field for this. After the fact, I double-checked trespassing laws in Virginia and was pleased to find I was okay on that. So in Virginia, you can go on private property unless you have been asked to not go there, or there are posted signs saying you're not welcome. Wherever you are, learn a little bit about where you're allowed to shoot and where you're not. You'll be more comfortable jumping in when you have opportunity, and you also won't do things that will reproach the name of Christ. This is one more picture talking about the rule of thirds. We had some beautiful sunrises there for a while, and I went out early to a location in town. I knew it'd have a good view out over the valley. And I tightened my aperture way down. Small number means not a lot of light coming in, aperture, because I wanted to get just the bright colors out there. I didn't want to capture any of the little valley below me. There was a house or so down in there. I just wanted that color out there. It was just beautiful, vibrant color. And then I realized just off frame, after I took a couple shots, that there were these Tesla superchargers over here. I thought, well, that looks really neat. And so, not just because I'm a nerd. And so I changed my angle, took a couple shots, and this was what I think was the best one I got there. When I later went and was going through my photos, I realized, oh, no wonder it looks good. It's nice and balanced. That supercharger's right there on the rule of thirds. It's right where your eye wants to fall, and you've got this just beautiful color leading into it. So the rule of thirds is best boiled down to this. Using that grid can help result in a balanced feel to a scene, help break you out of the habit of just plopping everything in the middle. I found this when I was looking through my photos. It was a snapshot from a family trip several years ago in Pittsburgh, and I kind of can't stand this photo. I don't know where to look. I don't know what to focus on. That is neither centered nor, it's just, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of gross. I mean, that would have been better, at least centered probably. But no composition went into this. I just leaned over the railing and took a picture because it was coming up the hill. Think it out, plan for it, get a feel for it. Rule of thirds. It's the intersections that tend to be your sweet spots, but you can put things along those lines. And in general, that'll give you a good starting point for what might feel more balanced. Now that I've hammered into your head, don't center things. Sometimes center is the most beautiful. Darren Vance here at Christian Light took this photo. And you notice you cannot get more centered than that in this direction. And I think this may, presentation may have cropped it a little bit, but I think the vanishing point is very close to center also. So it's kind of double centered, centered this way and centered this way. And it's, to me, a lovely shot. I had that as my phone wallpaper for probably about a year after he shared that picture. So rule of thirds is more of a suggestion of thirds. All right, here are 4 points I want you to take with you. Intent, simplicity, balance, and breathing space. Intent, be intentional about what you shoot and how you're going to shoot it. You take a picture of that little car coming up that incline, and you end up with a picture that reminds you of what Pittsburgh was like, doesn't give you any good feelings about, you know, beautiful. Be intentional. Simplicity, don't complicate things. Consider what you can leave out and still achieve your desired result. You don't have to have everything that's in the scene in the picture. Balance. A balanced image is beautiful, it's calming, it's welcoming. When you see a balanced image, there's just kind of a peacefulness to it. An imbalanced image can be okay if it's intentional. An imbalanced image is tense and jarring, and it can be captivating because of that, because it kind of has that intensity, but it's harder to execute well. It's hard to execute a good tense photo, whereas a balanced photo is a lot easier to get something that not just you will look at it and go, I find this pleasing. And breathing space, oops, need to go back up. Breathing space is simply, don't be afraid of emptiness in your image. Don't overcrowd it. There was a lot of sky in that tractor picture, and there was not a whole lot going on but some clouds and color. Nothing amazing up above that tractor. But if I had cropped way in on that tractor, that picture would not be nearly as interesting. Don't be afraid of some extra space, even if the space looks kind of wasted. Michael Schaffer, he's a professional photographer based in Washington, D.C. He said this, if everyone else is standing, lay on the ground. If everyone is laying on the ground, climb a tree. Your picture may not be any better, but at least it'll be different. This was an answer to the question, what is the best single change an amateur photographer can make to improve? Break out of the mold. This is at the Udvar-Hazy Center in Dulles, the air and space branch that's out there. There's a Huey. I imagine if I would go on Google and look at Udvar-Hazy Huey, or HU-1B, I would get a lot of images that looked nearly identical to this. I mean, that's what it is. This one I like better. This was sticking the camera on the floor, underneath the railing, and reaching as far as I could, while still staying out in the area where you're allowed to be, and taking this photo. That is just a little more interesting than here's a helicopter. This is like ordering helicopter by the foot. This is a little more character to it. These are pictures, the one on the left was taken in Harper's Ferry. I saw this beautiful brick building and thought, I just love that brick and the trim they have on it. It just really pops, and it had just rained, and I thought this will look really nice. And I couldn't get anything that looked nice. I was shooting from every angle I could think of, and it just looked like a building. And I'm not really a huge fan of this picture. The sky is way blown out back there. But right before I left, I took my phone out. I'd been shooting with my regular camera. I took my phone out, held it upside down to get the lens right down against the pavement, and shot that. That's the only one that survived the mass deletion that happened once I got all the pictures home. Not a great picture, but pleasing enough that I like to look at it every once in a while. So it survived because it was different. On the right, that's Georgetown, Washington, D.C. We came out, it was night, and it was very misty. It had been raining, and it was just fog everywhere. And there were red and white lights all down the street. The mist was just lit up with the lights. And I couldn't capture like the light in the mist. It just wouldn't happen. I only had a phone with me, by the way. And so I was trying to figure out, what can I do? And so I laid my phone down against the cobblestone, right beside the streetcar track here, and shot that because I could get some reflection of the red light that was coming from the store sign down here, and reflection off of the railing. Again, I'm not using rule of thirds here, by the way. That's basically centered. This got cropped a little bit going into the presentation. And this is basically centered, that red line. The tracks are leading you to the center pretty much. And I was pretty pleased with that. It's just a phone shot, but I like it. Just earlier, I had taken a picture standing in the middle of the tracks, or standing over by one of the cars, and it just, nothing to it, it just looked like Georgetown. This, I thought, had at least a little bit of character. If you go on Instagram and search Manhattan Bridge, you'll get these. And probably thousands just like them. This is almost purely random selection from the first several results, except for the people who accidentally tagged the Brooklyn Bridge as the Manhattan Bridge. Basically, it's all the same. This guy tried black and white. This guy tried awkwardly standing in the front of it. This guy decided to pretend to be an influencer and stand very, I don't know if he's drinking coffee or taking a picture, but pictures of people taking pictures is usually just not very pleasing. This person went real crazy and just turned the camera to the side a little bit. Rule of how many degrees. This one is probably, to me, that one stood out as, oh, that could be worse. You get nice contrast, looks okay. This one, that's not horrible, but it's just, this is down under Manhattan Bridge overpass, known as Dumbo, and this is just, you just look at if you look in a travel guide and said Dumbo, well, I'd probably just have a picture like this. And you wouldn't find anything interesting about it. Months ago, I ran across this picture and saved it right away. It has character. It's both good and different. And the different helps counter the ways in which it's not as technically good. I don't like this vehicle here, that truck there. They feel a little too prominent to me. Feel a little too new. It kind of ruins the feel I like to get out of it. But overall, I find it a really good picture, and the fact that it's different outweighs those little nitpicks I have. Interesting pics I ran across in an article about finding beauty in the mundane. Photographer Dan Peters found that shooting up through a grapevine gave him fresh and pleasing images. He also found that lying on your back under grapevines in a public park makes people look at you funny. But I thought they were pleasing too. Now, I'm not saying to take Michael Schaffer's encouragement literally and just lie down every time you get somewhere. A lot of those pictures did have a low perspective. I guess he could have tried climbing the grapevine, but I don't think that would work well. Look for small things. This is a little ice cream stand, and the lights on the little overhang are supposed to look like ice cream cones. Not a great picture, but it just has something to it. Look for the little things. More little things. We were on a picnic. There's I don't even know what this kind of thing is, some sort of little wildflowery thing. Took it, plucked it, put it on the picnic table. The sun was kind of starting to set back there, and so you had some nice lighting. The post from the pavilion was already casting a shadow, so I could hide my shadow and the camera shadow in the one that was already there. That's one problem you'll get with trying to take pictures of things that are getting nice light like that, is you then are standing between it and the light. So I was able to just kind of, that shadow was already there, and I hid in it. So I could still get a little shadow off of that. I like it. That little thing is, well, it's not even as tall as a quarter, from the top of the purple to the bottom. Look for the small things. You don't have to have a great big scene to get an interesting picture. I'm not a big fan of taking pictures of food. Obviously, I'd rather eat it. I was on a trip last fall for work, and we stopped in Portland, Maine at a little restaurant just a couple blocks off the water. And I think they must have had a consultant make them Instagram friendly, because the table was this nice wood, the water was served in little jelly jars, and I mean, this came out looking like it was posing for a picture, so I took a picture. And if I remember right, that is pretty close to the thirds intersection, somewhere right in there. That's the way it worked out. I am a pluviophile, that is someone who loves rain. And so I found myself taking lots of pictures of water. This was through a windshield. I wanted a picture of the water tower in the fog, and the camera wanted to focus on the windshield, and I thought, hey, that looks interesting. So I snapped a picture. This is a windshield again. This is that little blue strip up near the top of most windshields, and I just thought it looked pretty. So, little things that were just available. This was, it had rained really hard, then got warm, and there's a little visor over the sunroof of my car, and I opened it to go home from work, and there were all these little droplets hanging from it. And so those are just little water droplets hanging up there. And I think that gold is a reflection of the top edge of my phone. This was at a Christmas banquet, and I thought the decorations were just really pretty. And so I got out my phone and took a picture and kind of hated it. There's a part of me that thinks, oh, this is kind of pleasing. How many people kind of like this picture? So overall, it's better than some things. I kind of don't like it. But I think it's because I wish I had my other camera. I wish I had a real camera there, because I really wanted to get a good picture of it. And so I don't like that the exit sign back across the room has this little red dot in there. I'm not a big fan of photoshopping pictures like this. You'll see one exception in just a minute. And it was a cell phone camera, and I had to get close, and there's this whole distortion thing going on. The bottle looks like it gets narrower at the bottom. Well, I need to just stop that and realize that, okay, this is on its own merit, reasonably pretty picture, and stop getting annoyed at the fact that, oh, I could have done better if only I had X, Y, Z. If you see something looks nice, take a picture of it to the best of your ability, and don't whine about the fact that if only I had whatever, I could have done it better. Don't let it ruin your fun. Take advantage of opportunities. This was a flood down at the park, and so, if there are things happening right now that don't normally happen, that's a great time to go take some pictures. And I'm pretty pleased with this. Nice reflection on the water of that post there. This is a place that I wanted to take a picture for a long time, because there were these weeds, these overgrown tracks. And I really wanted to I just thought it looked really neat. This overgrown track had an aesthetic I liked, but it was super boring to just see weeds and tracks and gray and brown. And the sun sets over here, and so yeah, there's not really any way to get nice lighting on it. It's just, well, okay. And then one day we had a nice wet snow and hopped in the car and said we're going to take pictures. And so take advantage of what God gives you today that He might not give you tomorrow to go out and capture that beauty. This is another picture where I can feel a little bit like, it's it's okay, but oh, it could have been so much better. But I took it and I saved it, and I'm reasonably happy with it. I made peace with the fact that, yes, it could be better, but it's an okay picture anyway. Same here. Everybody takes this picture. There's a giant one. I mean, there's one 10 feet tall out in the lunchroom here in this building. Everybody has this picture. So I went there and I took my camera, and I was going to get a different picture of the Babcock State Park this Christmas. I was going to get the different picture. I didn't know what Michael Schaffer had said. I don't think he had said it yet, but I was going to climb a tree or lie down somewhere. I was going to get that different picture. And there were people all over the place, everywhere except this angle. So I got this picture. I didn't delete it. I still like, it was very, very foggy that day, and I still like the fog coming down. It was springtime, and so you had some green, but the trees were still very bare. There's an aesthetic to it I still like. So just because I couldn't get that one shot I wanted, I still got one that I'm fairly happy with. Because if I would go back today, I don't know that I would even get one this good. People. I said I don't like taking pictures of people. I'm going to throw a couple comments out there. Wide-angle distortion is one thing I want to mention. This picture is not really a portrait, but his feet are down here, his eyes... Okay, he's downhill a little bit there. He's framed, they're both framed fairly similar. But this one looks a lot more natural, doesn't it? She's 9, he's 5. This doesn't really look like a 9 and 5-year-old, and that looks like a really weird corner to have in your house. And this one was shot at the equivalent of 24 millimeters. There's some focal length stuff in the handout. I'm not touching that in our talk here. This one was shot at 55 millimeters. If you're taking pictures of people, don't have your camera zoomed all the way out, like the biggest picture you can get from your camera. Don't zoom that all the way out and then get up close to them, because you'll distort them. A better example of that would be these chairs. This was shot at 24 millimeter equivalent. This was shot at 74 millimeter equivalent. This chair is, it's pointed back. This one is actually kind of squarish, like the chair really is. So take note of that if you take pictures. Play with your zoom and the positioning to make sure that you don't have the baby in the front row look like his head is, more than 1.5 times the size of dad's head in the back row. The other thing there is, don't assume your person has to look at the camera. Everybody thinks when you take a picture of someone, they have to look at the camera. These got cropped a little bit strange to drop into the presentation, and I didn't feel like fixing it. That was my daughter a couple years ago, waiting for the family picture, and the photographer snapped that. And I thought that was just a really nice little picture. And this was my nephew waiting to have his picture taken by someone standing out there, and I was over this direction with the camera and took a picture of him while he was waiting. Your subject doesn't have to look right at your camera. Tools. Get a tripod, okay? You need a tripod. I have a fairly cheap one from Amazon that I use for my regular camera, and what I like about it, it's not top of the line by any means. It's sturdy. Make sure that it's reasonably sturdy. I like the fact that it has a hinge on it. I can flip it to shoot portrait or landscape without having to adjust the head. It's just one set screw and twist it. I also have a small tripod that I can mount a phone on. And that head can actually be put on the real big tripod also. You need a tripod. You won't be able to do long exposure shots without one. Just go ahead and bite the bullet and get one. You'll be happy you did, actually. One thing I wanted to... No, sorry. Wasn't that direction. Flashes. If you have a hot shoe flash, a flash that goes on top of the camera, the nice big ones, and you know how to use it, good for you. If you don't, you only have the flash in your camera or your phone, here's how you use it. You don't. In general, like if you're shooting a birthday party and everybody's sitting around the table and you want to capture it, sure, go ahead, use a flash. If you want something artistic, don't use a can of flash, it's going to wash everything out. It's going to make everything harsh. I'll make one quick note about filters. Take people a couple minutes to get up here. Neutral density filters. I talked about this shot that I made. And so I wanted that water to smooth out. You see all these ripples in the water? And I wanted to get a nice smooth shot there. I didn't have any neutral density filter. A neutral density filter is a filter that just makes your lens darker. It's basically just dyed glass in general. And I didn't have one, so I made my aperture as small as I could. Not much light was coming in. And then I couldn't get my shutter long enough because it would let too much light in. And so I was kind of stuck. Then I remembered I have sunglasses. So I hung my sunglasses off the front of my camera. It made the edges a little fuzzy, but I could crop that out. And I was able to then extend my shutter out and get a much more smooth effect there. So you don't need to go buying filters necessarily. Take your sunglasses and shoot through them with your camera. If they're prescription sunglasses like mine, you might find some interesting focus challenges, but it worked. We're not going to touch on these. We don't have time. Polarizing filters just cut down on reflection, which can be nice depending on what you're shooting. Last thing I'll have to say is take pictures. On the handout, could I get a couple ushers up here to hand these out to the people? On the handout, there are a few challenges. Take a couple photo challenges. One of them that's on there is shoot one picture in the same room every day for 30 days. It forces you to find new perspective and make things interesting. Okay, thank you for your time. Hopefully you got a little something out of this, and I will turn this over to people who are supposed to be here now in this time slot.